Hey, and welcome back, everyone, to a new episode of Books, Cats, and Chaos, the podcast where we explore epic tales, sprinkle in some messed up humor, and talk about how much we love our cats and the weird things that they do. My name is James.
And I am Casey, and we are a husband and wife team who love all things books and cats and the fun chaos in between.
So this week we are going to be exploring the two bonus scenes from the Throne of Glass series. And the only reason we're talking about these bonus scenes right now is because they pertain to the first book, Throne of Glass. One of them takes place before the book, which you'll understand when you read the book, and one takes place after the book, but before Crown of Midnight. And they're both very short. They're just, you know, I don't know, a couple dozen and a half pages, maybe. The first one's probably not even a dozen pages. But they do add a little bit of, you know, a little something special to the story. And I think they're good. I got further along in the series before I read them. But I think they actually would make more sense to read right after you read Throne of Glass instead of farther along in the series like I am. But, you know.
Yeah. I actually didn't know about them because I joined Throne of Glass kind of late. I read them the first time like 2 years ago. And these had already been published and posted out there on the internet. Some of the bonus scenes you could find in the old editions, like in the back of certain books. And I think some were like posted in like Barnes and Noble editions versus the Target edition. Some were posted online. And then people have just taken pictures of the stories in the books and stuff and posted them online. And that's how I found out about them. So we will have them in the show notes again for this week. In case you didn't see the show notes from our previous one, you can still access them and read them if you have no idea what we're talking about.
So were these actually in the original releases of the book, or did they come out later?
That I'm not sure.
Oh.
I've heard both, but I think they were in the earlier releases of the book, and when you get the books now, they don't have them.
Huh.
At least I don't. Yeah.
That's interesting. But okay, well, no worries, because we're going to go over it.
Yep. And then at the end of going over both of those scenes, we'll do just like a brief review of the Throne of Glass book and, you know, how... explore how you felt about it, our ratings, thoughts, little extra things. And then next episode, we will jump right into Crown of Midnight.
Sounds good.
All right. So content reminder, this podcast is for adult audiences only because we are adults and we like to use adult language. So just make sure you don't have the little tykes running about. Save this podcast for a little later. And enjoy.
Yep. And if you haven't already, but you like what we're doing and what you hear, please don't forget to rate, subscribe, or comment on this podcast on one of our many different social outlets. We would love to hear from you. We would love to talk to you and just, you know, yeah, engage with people who also enjoy the books. So... without further ado, let's get into The Captain and the Prince. This is the short story that takes place before Throne of Glass. So this is like a prologue. Yeah, actually could just be included as a prologue in the book, which would have been fine too. Anyway. So this takes place right before Throne of Glass, and it's a scene between Dorian and Kale. They are sitting and they're doing a couple things. They're sitting and talking about a number of things, but they're also dying from the heat, apparently. in the castle. And there is apparently just a stench coming up from the city below. Most of the royal court has left, so the castle seems to be pretty empty, and they're just not having a good time. And they're having double not a good time because Dorian still has to give his answer to the king about which champion he's going to find for the contest. And Dorian is already not on board with this. So he thinks that the competition is a stupid idea. He thinks it's a waste of gold and a waste of time. The other council members, as Kale is quick to remind him, have already selected their champions. So they're really just sort of waiting on Dorian at this point to make his choice. Dorian admits that if he's going to be forced into this, he wants to make sure that he wins. But he doesn't want to do it anyway in the first place. Kale mentions four names, three soldiers and one mercenary. Dorian rejects them, thinking they all sound a little too ordinary. He wants his champion to make a statement, since not participating is not an option. As Kale is quick to remind him, if Dorian chooses not to participate, that could be the wrong message to send at this particular moment, with the way that the king is just being in nothing worse than, you know, having a contest and having your own son say, no, I'm not, I'm not taking part in this, right? So Dorian doesn't really have a choice. So he gets to thinking, and he immediately, you know, his mind goes to Arabin, thinking, oh, he'd be a great champion, but there's no way in hell that they could get Arabin to agree to this. What would be the incentive for him? I mean, he's already got just about anything that somebody could want, right? But as he's on this train of thought, he thinks of Selena Sardothian. It's been a year since she was captured, tried, and sentenced. And Dorian and Kale had been in Syria when it happened. They got raced back as fast as they could, but they still missed it. So she was there and gone before they had a chance to do anything. The king had the guards that were watching her reassigned. All the documents were sealed. And Dorian and Kale don't know anything about her. They don't know how old she was, what happened in the castle, anything, what her temperament was even like. It's like she came and she was just ghosted right out. Kale says, no, absolutely not. Dorian, of course, says, well, if we have to have the competition, I might as well have something pleasant to look at. And they bicker, and Dorian demands that Kale tell him everything he knows. So Kale relents, says that he has made several inquiries over the last year about Selena to Endovir, and all of it's gone unanswered. Dorian muses that whoever or whatever, she's a threat to his dad or something. And so obviously they must have been ordered to just anything that comes relating to her. It didn't, you know, if you saw something, no, you didn't, right? So he thinks that maybe they should just go to Endovir for themselves, especially since they don't know, you know, what condition she's in or anything like that. Kale is quick to remind him, you know, she could be broken in more ways than one, to which Dorian says that, yes, but we're not going to know unless we see her. After much back and forth, Dorian finally gets Kale to relent, and they make their plans to go to the mines. So.
Yeah. It would have been a good prologue. It might have felt a little jarring, but I actually really enjoyed getting to see the dynamic between Kale and Dorian, and the back and forth of like, yes, we should go see her. No, we shouldn't. But I want her. No, you don't. Like, it just goes to show you the dynamic more between Dorian and Kale. Like, we see some of it in Throne of Glass, but so much of it is Kale is with Selena training, or Dorian's with Selena flirting, and we don't get to see a whole lot of interaction between Dorian and Kale. But we know that they've grown up together. We know that Kale, you know, is his basically personal bodyguard, even though he's captain of the guards and stuff. So it was a nice chance to see them just together in their dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, that was the nice thing about this chapter was, and I feel like we didn't get that in Throne of Glass, right? So Throne of Glass constantly told us about the rapport that the two had with each other and how they were, you know, friends, like brothers, and they, Kale could bicker and whatever, but we didn't actually really see very much of it. It was always just sort of mentioned by other people or in the narrative or something. And this chapter actually gave us that interaction of, you know, the prince saying, well, I want to do this, and Kale going, no.
Mm-hmm.
But then sitting there and going, but you're going to do it anyway. But then Dorian also sitting there going, okay, I kind of do have to relent a little bit here because no other guard is going to do this for me.
Mm-hmm.
None of them are going to cross the desert with me. Kale is literally the only one that I can count on. And so, you know, seeing them kind of haggle the deal, you know, back and forth, It was a really nice interaction that I did really enjoy.
Would you have wanted this in the Throne of Glass book? Now that you've read Throne of Glass and you've read a couple of the other books, and then coming back and reading this scene, would you have liked to have actually seen this as like the prologue to Throne of Glass, or do you think that would have disrupted the flow of that story?
That's a tough call because, you know, when you enter into the Throne of Glass series, you know, you come in immediately with them arriving at the mines, and that starts off the whole journey, right? And you don't know anything about these characters, you know, at all. And as you read through, as you read through the book and also some of the other books, when you come back and you then read this, you go, oh, that was that and that was that, like the party. Like, that's all I'm going to say. That's just, but you know what I mean, right? Like,
yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay. And that was that. And, you know. And so there is a benefit to reading it after because it's a nice little like, oh, I see where these pieces came in, and kind of starting off the story without knowing any of the three major characters, really. So you have Selena, Dorian, and Kale, and you don't know any of them from each other. And so you kind of see the dynamic all at the same time. And if this had been in the beginning, you would already understand Dorian and Kale's point of view before you even get into the rest of the story.
Yeah.
So it would probably be better suited, like, at the end of the book.
As, like, a special
bonus. chapter. Like,
yeah.
I could see where that would honestly would maybe probably work better. Just to keep you on the same page with all the characters developing all at the same time, because you don't have an insight to any of their personalities.
Yeah.
Because then you read Throne of Glass and you're like, Kale's just being a dick just to be a dick. But I feel like if you read this, then you don't maybe necessarily wouldn't feel that way. Because you're like,
you're understanding where he's coming from. Kinda,
yeah, exactly. Right. Like, but in the beginning, you're just like, he's just being difficult just because, you know, like.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I'd say probably maybe the end of the book is probably a better spot
No.
for it. But I would still definitely say, reading it after you read Throne of Glass before you get into
Their
the
books.
other books is I would that's my recommendation would be read Throne of Glass and then read this and then read the rest of the series continuing forward.
Do you think, as you're still on your Throne of Glass journey through the series, do you think this scene is necessary for anybody that's new coming into Throne of Glass? Like, should they go out and seek the links to read this bonus scene? Or do you think it's fun, but it's not necessary for the journey?
No, I don't think it's necessary because it doesn't really add anything to the story that is critical in terms of like enlightening a question or a mystery from the first book. It seems to be here purely on a here's a nice little like just something that you can read
Backstory.
story, but it doesn't impact the rest of the book really. Or, I mean, I won't say that because it does give you, a nice insight to Dorian and Kale and their thought process behind coming to get her. But that in itself, if you never read it, you wouldn't be missing out on anything in the actual like story itself,
Yeah.
but I did enjoy it, so
Was this kind of like how you pictured like Dorian coming up with the idea to use Selena as his champion? Or were you thinking like there had to have been a different way he thought of using Selena?
no, I pretty much figured it was a
A screw you to his dad?
Yeah, like if you guys are gonna make me do this, then fine. I'm gonna do it the way I want. And maybe that's why it's more beneficial to read this after you read the book, because you have a better understanding of Dorian's character after you read the first Throne of Glass book. And so then this little story makes more sense. You
Yeah.
read this first and you're like, wow, he's kind of rebellious and you don't understand why.
Yeah.
But you read Throne of Glass and you're like, oh.
You understand the dynamic between the two relationships and
Yeah,
everything. Yeah.
I get it now.
I was actually, when I first read this, a bit surprised that he thought of Arabin, like wanting to throw Arabin into this championship thing to become the king's champion. And I kind of wonder how the story would have been like so different if Arabin had been contacted and agreed to be, to compete and stuff. Like, would he have held his own like Selena did against Kane and all of the murders that were happening and everything?
That's hard to say because Arabin, even though he was the self-proclaimed king of assassins and whatever, right? We never actually really saw him in action because by the
True.
time we, he's in his mid to late 30s or something, and all we ever really encounter him in is when he's making deals.
True.
He's more of an information broker than he is, not saying that he didn't, kill his way up to the top, because he most certainly did. But I feel
Yeah.
like a lot of that is behind him. And he's
That makes
smart,
sense.
So he's smart and his instincts are definitely there. He notes things, pays attention to things. But, going up against a beefy guy, in his prime, we're assuming, I think even Arabin would have a hard time without his network of being able to manipulate things the way that he's accustomed to.
But do you think being there, he would have been able to manipulate things? He has connections like everywhere, we're assuming. So do you think he would have been able to manipulate things and broker things behind the scenes?
Maybe. I
Or do you
mean,
think Kane would have caught up to him and
you know what? He could, maybe, but then, and maybe not, since we kind of, you know, he seems to, well, yeah, I don't know how to finish that thought without giving a spoiler. So I'm gonna just say, you know, maybe he would try, and maybe he might be sort of successful, but at the end of the day, you know, when you still have to fight. But maybe he would have found a way to poison Kane ahead of time. I don't know. Like, it's, you know, like they poisoned Selena. Maybe he would have found a way to turn the tables and poison, you know, or maybe because of who he is, he would have been watched way harder by Parrington, and because they would
And
have been like,
everybody.
no, this guy is like, you know, the assassin underworld, you know, shadow darkness underbelly of the city. We are not even giving him an ounce to breathe. Like, they might have tried to put one of the rings on him right away. Who knows? Like, they
Oh, yeah,
would have
that's
been like,
true.
no, you're too dangerous to be thinking on your own.
Slip.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, and but more of any, and more so than any of that, I think he would have said no. I don't think he would have done it. I think he would have been like, no, there's literally nothing that you can give to me that will
That.
make me consider doing this. Like,
Yeah. No, I agree. He is too much the man behind the scenes, the broker, like you said. I could see him wanting to sponsor somebody else on his behalf and been coming to Dorian with like, I have a proposition for you, and then Dorian might have been way over his head at that point.
oh yeah. Yeah,
So
that would have been like, it was a good idea, but I think that, you know, Dorian dismissed it as fast as he thought of it because he also realized, no, there's no
just
way.
yeah, even if he could contact Erebin, there would be no way. But I mean, at least that line of thinking led him to Selena, and then we have the story that we did. So I don't know if you caught this, but we got that line, for and quote, for a heartbeat, Dorian could have sworn he felt a cool northern wind on his face, faintly scented with pine and snow. He leaned his head out the window, trying to catch some more of it. And then just a few sentences later, that's when he gets this idea of using Selena Sardothian as his champion, you know, for the tournament. And we briefly get that, you know, with Selena in Throne of Glass, also smelling the pine and snow and being reminded of home, being reminded of Terrasen. I don't know if you just happened to catch that, or I thought it was a really, really nice subtle tie-in, like in Throne of Glass, when she smells this, she's reminded of her original home, and then here Dorian also catches a smell of this, and then his mind is drawn to Selena, almost like fate is working in their favor together or something.
Do you think somebody was trying to sway his line of thinking?
Maybe.
Was our not ghost ghost queen sitting there with the breeze going?
She was blowing the idea over to him.
Exactly. I don't know. It seems interesting that that very specific wording is used for the scent of the air. And then when he immediately runs to the window and it's, there's nothing, it's just hot. So it does seem more along the lines of something was trying to help lead his thinking in that direction. I think that was what I was kind of, yeah, that's what I was thinking when I read it. So.
It was a good little subtle tie-in thing, I thought.
Yeah, I did too. Like I said, I think it was a nice addition to the Throne of Glass story that you can pick up afterwards and just be like, oh, okay. Like,
Yeah.
I see the reasoning behind why they did what they were maybe expecting when they got there. They didn't know what to, like Kale said, was she going to be broken physically and mentally? Was she going to be like this rabid mad woman who would like try to kill them right off the bat? I mean, they literally had no idea what they were walking into,
Yeah.
which I think made Dorian more excited.
Boy has a death wish. Boy likes danger.
Yeah, so.
He is something else because, like you mentioned earlier, like they had no idea how old, Selena is, what she looks like, or anything. And he's like, yeah, I just want something pleasant to look at while we have to sit through this, stupid championship tournament thing. He has no idea what she looks like, and he's just like, yeah, I just want something pretty. Like, boy, you're such a flirt. You're such a womanizer. I don't know.
Right. And nobody's even really seen her face. So nobody
Yeah.
even knows if she's pretty or not, first of all.
He's just assuming. He's just being a
And
shit.
she's been there. So, I mean, she's going to be, starving and black and blue and covered in dirt. And like,
Yeah.
this is not the way you go and you're like, yeah, all right. All right. No, she's going to sit there going, what is wrong with you, man? But yeah,
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah, I do too. Did you happen and trying not to give any spoilers for those that haven't read Assassin's Blade yet, but did you catch the little tie-in from this short story with a scene in the Assassin's Blade?
Yeah, where Kale got in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I couldn't really say anything else without giving away
Anything.
any spoilers. But when you guys read Throne of Glass, then read the short stories, then read whatever else. And when you read Assassin's Blade, when you get to the scene, you'll know which scene. It'll be impossible to miss.
And for those of you wondering, is specifically the story The Assassin and the Underworld in
Yes.
Assassin's Blade.
And we will
So,
talk about it once we get up there in
yes.
the podcast. So, if you miss it, then just wait for us to talk about it.
Yep,
We'll get there eventually.
we will. So moving on to the second bonus story, The Assassin and the Princess. This, from what I've read and seen online, this is supposed to take place in between the events of Throne of Glass and Crown of Midnight. And it's a scene between Princess Nahemia and Selena, and they decide they need a girls' day. They need a girls' day outside of the castle, away from all the politics, away from the king and everything. So they dress up, they dress up real nice, even though it's kind of cold, and they decide to walk from the castle out into Rifthold, sticking to the main broad roads, doing some window shopping, going along, past the Royal Theater and to Selena's favorite bakeries because she hasn't been there in so long, going into bookstores. This just sounds like my kind of day.
It's like just a nice day downtown somewhere, like
Yeah.
what we do when we go down and we go, all right, let's stop at a coffee shop and then now let's go to the bookstore and then we round off the day with a trip to the brewery or whatever. It's the same basic, same basic vibe. Like,
Yep. Do have to mention that they did try to stay away from any areas that they would have seen any slaves or anything like that because they agreed beforehand that they just wanted to be two ordinary girls, not saddled with politics and slavery or, who Selena is, an assassin, the king's champion now. So they just agree, we're two ordinary girls going shopping. So their whole, they have an appointment at this really fancy dress shop that Selena used to go to when she was, you know, Adderland's assassin and she had money to burn. And they had a private appointment because, you know, Nehemia is still a princess and everything. And they get there and there's a small group already shopping. So Nehemia and Selena decide to wait. They're served, you know, tea and cookies and everything. Owner comes out to greet them, but he is also attempting to hide, like standing in front of a slave girl that's with this other party. But Nehemia and Selena see her. And it kind of puts a little damper on their mood. But again, they try to, you know, they're not here to discuss politics. They're just here to get some gowns for Nehemia, trying to have a good time. And Selena can't help but notice that the slave girl does have gold cuffs that are welded onto her wrists. And Selena can't help but look at her own wrists and see the scars on stuff from when she was a slave. So Nehemia decides to try on some dresses, placing orders for fabrics and dresses and jewels to match. And, you know, she's only doing this because she wants to get an in with Queen Georgina.
Yeah.
Hoping that she can get an in with this queen and her inner circle so she can, you know, make some headway with the king and, you know, hopefully stop these attacks on Elway and everything. So Nehemia's trying to play nice, trying to dress up to the queen's standards. And while she's going on, trying on things and matching fabrics and jewels, Selena's currently browsing and she eyes this lavender dress. And the owner comes up to her and he says, we can modify the sleeves, we can make them full length. Saying without saying, like, we can cover up your scars. And she, Selena, is not ashamed of her scars, but they did happen to raise questions, especially within the castle, with among the nobles and stuff. So she thinks about it, but she keeps eyeing this red velvet dress in the window. It's unlike anything she's seen before. It's kind of sultry, it sounds like. I mean, red velvet with black lace. Yeah. It has an open back. It's plunging neckline. And it would turn heads. But it would also show the scars on her back. She decides to try the dress on anyways. And Nehemia sees the scars on her back. And Selena asks her if she should cover them up. And Nehemia tells her no. Don't do that. And of course, because of who they are, the girls do talk politics. Nehemia asks how often Selena thinks of Endovir and if she could free the sleeves there if she could. And Selena tells her that she thinks of Endovir every day. Of course she would free the slaves. Catching the shop owner's eyes, Selena realizes the shop owner knows exactly who she is. That she was the assassin, that she was the assassin sent to Endovir, and the realization makes her sad. Once Nehemia places her order, she goes out to her guards so that they can find a coach to take them back home. Selena decides she's going to buy that red velvet dress anyways. And, you know, why not? So the shop owner tells her to let him know if anyone faints at the sight of it or starts a riot because this dress is just the dress to end all dresses, right? He gives her a pair of beautiful dove gray suede gloves because it is really cold out. And he tells her it's on the house for many years of loyal patronage and a gift for a year spent without any gloves at all. Selena nods and takes the gloves. The shop owner, Cavill, knew who and what she was, that she had been enslaved for a year, knew what kind of money she used to buy his dresses with. And he still gifted her these gloves. And so the girls climb into the coach. And as they ride home, they wonder what it would be like if both of them were truly ordinary people with no burdens, no backgrounds that they have. They just want to be free. And yet, even for one day, they couldn't even pretend to just be two girls out shopping. You know, they both have their pasts. But they are glad for each other, and they're glad that they're each other's friends. And to be honest, they're glad that they aren't ordinary.
We're glad they're not ordinary, too.
We would have had a very, very, very different story if they were ordinary. So what were your just overall thoughts on this bonus scene?
I definitely enjoyed the regularness of it. There wasn't anything harrowing. There wasn't anything life or death, or it was just a day that they could go out and just be friends. And especially, I feel like coming off of this whole thing where she wasn't even sure if Nehemia was on her side at first, and then going through the challenge and her saving her when she was poisoned, and so they've had a time of it, right?
Yeah, the back and forth with the word marks and everything.
So this is a chance for them to just get out and try to be as normal as possible, which they come to realize doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not normal.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's kind of, they have to come to this level of acceptance that we're not normal and that's okay. And, we are who we are. And one of the things that I really did like was the fact that when Selena is eyeing this dress and it's just so scandalous, she's talking about, one of her major reasons for buying it is because she knows that it'll piss off Kale.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
She's like, if I buy this, he's going to be so mad and maybe have a heart attack. I have to get it.
That was awesome. It's so Selena thinking, like, she wants to be the best dressed all the time. We see from the very beginning of Throne of Glass that she is very much into fashion, and having been a slave, that has not dulled that. And now that she has this outrageous salary from the king, she's like, oh my god, I want to buy all the dresses. I want to buy all the things. And let's not even gloss over the fact that our Selena girl is a book girly. Like, some of the first purchases were books. Books before dresses. Yes. But, yeah, it was a cute scene in that they were both trying to get out of the castle and have girl bonding time. It was still kind of sad that they both couldn't get away 100% from their duties and politics and being reminded constantly of the king and, everything he's done.
Well, and Nehemia in particular seemed to be just having a very difficult time relaxing and disconnecting.
Yeah.
So much to the point where the Selena was like, if I say the wrong thing, is she going to like just blow her lid here? Because she seems like she's not having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
But it took a while. But, when you've got the weight of the world on your shoulders, how can you really ever
relax,
let go of that,
Yeah. So
they went out to try and be normal, but then they realize at the end of the day that they're not normal. They'll never be normal, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Because they can be not normal together.
Yeah. At least they have each other.
Yeah, which was a really important thing, I think, for both of them to realize that they had each other. And they had both found a good friend in the other one.
Yeah. So what was your overall thoughts on this scene? Like, would you have liked it to have been included, like, in Crown of Midnight, maybe somewhere? Because I don't think it really fits into Throne of Glass in the way that story, progressed. But would you have liked to have seen it in Crown of Midnight? Or do you think this, like the other bonus scene, works better as just a bonus scene at the end of the book?
That's hard because, like, you almost would like to see this scene at, even at the end of Throne of Glass as an like an epilogue kind of, you know, one of those things where you read chapter, I don't know how many chapters, or was it 40, no, 55 or whatever. So after you hit 55 and then you have, you know, epilogue 1 month later.
Yeah.
Or something. And then that's how they close out, you know, Throne of Glass. And you're like, oh, okay. And now I can begin the next one. But in this story, it seems like because she's already getting the salary from the king, so she's already been doing some of the duties that she's got to do, right? And in Crown of Midnight, I think they take us from, without getting too much into it, I think that the story starts us off with her getting her first assignment, right? Like
one of her assignments, yeah.
So really the timeline wouldn't really work, you know, by putting it at the end of Throne of Glass.
Yeah.
Because this is it's near enough the beginning of Crown of Midnight that it doesn't spoil any of the story. Mm-hmm. But it's far enough away from the beginning of Crown of Midnight that you can't put it in the front, because both of them are already trying to just relax and get away from everything for just a day.
Yeah.
And when you start reading Crown of Midnight, you know why, because Selena is working her ass off. So it really does kind of work better as its own little standalone out of the book story, because if you tried to put this into Crown of Midnight, I feel like it would be out of place. Like,
I agree.
Maybe you could maybe make it work. I don't know, but it does work as a nice little, you know, standalone. What is that? Typically a novella, right? Like,
yeah, I could have see this extended as a novella, but yeah, no, I agree. I think trying to fit it into Crown of Midnight would have felt a little weird, especially with the pacing and overall story flow. Whereas the first bonus scene that we got with Dorian and Kale, that would have worked as like a great bonus chapter at the end of Throne of Glass, just to be like,
yeah,
here's a little extra thing.
Yeah, I agree.
So now that we have finished Throne of Glass, what was your overall opinion on the Throne of Glass book? And has it changed since reviewing and discussing it since we started this podcast?
Overall opinion on the book, I really liked the book. I feel like the pacing of the story was good. The world building, you know, was really nice. Character introductions, you know, you really get to know each of the characters as you're going throughout the story, even if some of them are a little irritating with the choices that they make. But that makes them, I mean, you can't read a story and like every character, because then that's just not a good story, right? Like,
no, you have to have the conflict.
Or even if you like the character, if they don't do something that irritates you at least a little bit, then, you know,
then they're too perfect.
Yeah, you got to have your friends. Even if you look at your group of friends and you're like, I love my friends, but if you could just stop doing that, so I did enjoy, and I enjoyed the overall story too, of just how it all progressed. The story progression was really good too.
If you had to rate Throne of Glass out of 5 stars, what would you give it?
I'd probably give it a 5-star, because I did really enjoy it. And I don't really think there was anything about it. I don't think there was anything really about it that I didn't like, you know? It had all the good elements, and yeah, like I said, the pacing was great and the story was great, and the
definite reread.
Yeah, I would probably reread it, you know, at some point if I ever make it through my long list of TBRs because that list continues to grow, apparently.
Yep. Death by TBR.
So if I ever had time to reread it, maybe. Would I love to see somebody do an accurate TV show slash cartoon about this? Yes, definitely.
So, talking of TV shows or movie, live action or an animated style?
It depends. Like, if you had somebody come in to do a show and they had the budget and the creative, I don't know, foresight or control or whatever to do something like, so I'm not saying in the style of like Scott Pilgrim, right? But I'm using that as an example to showcase a movie where they didn't skimp out on making it the way that it should have been made.
Okay.
With the special effects, with the, you know, the presentation of the story, it is an example of a movie. Whether you like the movie or you don't like the movie or this whatever, none of the special effects were they're not hokey, right? Like, yeah. You don't look at it and go, oh, they half-assed that one, like, you know, obvious green screen or.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you had somebody who was able to do a TV show, like, and obviously for a TV show, that becomes very expensive. So, I mean, TV show obviously is better because you have long form and you could split the book up into, you know, 10, 12 episodes.
Yeah.
But typically movies do better because you have a bigger budget versus, you know, spending $1 million per episode on a TV show. That gets to be quite a bit. And if they're not making that back, you know, whatever, I'm going off in the weeds here, but you'd have to have somebody do it right. And
I feel
not.
Like Throne of Glass would be so hard to do as movies though, because they're just, even in the smaller books, the first couple books that are smaller, I feel like it would be so hard to pack all of that into like a 2-hour movie.
No, it would be like a 4-hour movie. That's what I mean. That's why
Lord
a TV
of the
show,
Rings style.
Yeah, a TV show would work way better because you could split that up into 10 or 12 episodes.
Yeah.
And really cover all the grounds. But a lot of the stuff that you're looking at would work better in a cartoon format. And if you were going to do that, then I would say something like Vox Machina or
the Lord of the Rings one we just watched.
The Lord of the Rings one. Even though I really did like the Lord of the Rings one, though, I like the animation from Vox Machina better.
I did feel like the 3D animation on some scenes with the Lord of the Rings one that just came out was a little weird with the cartoon, like 2D looking. I mean, I know the whole thing was CGI, whatever, but there were some things that didn't overlay well.
Yeah.
Especially in the opening scene where, like, her horse is galloping the thing, and I'm like, oh, you could clearly tell the horse is just floating on this 3D rock image. But overall, that style, I thought was really nice. But yeah, I could see Vox Machina, because they pulled out all the punches on that. And I really need that show to come back.
Yeah. That's a great animation style because it's, on one hand, it's not an overly complicated animation style.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing that they really go crazy in with, you know, lots of just, you know, I don't know what to compare it to. But they also didn't cheap out on it you do with some things. So I could see it, but the conditions would have to be just right.
You can't skip out. Like, you have to have a full budget.
I feel like the cartoon would maybe be a better choice because then you could really get the characters drawn and designed the way that the book describes them.
And the glass castle.
And the glass castle. And I mean, come on, with the creatures and the beasts and, you know, the Riddorak and...
Yeah.
And just, you know, all of those different magical elements, the word marks glowing. And I mean, you could do a lot in a cartoon that
that I think would
do
be...
in a show, but is infinitely harder.
It's, yeah, like without the proper budget, it's just going to come off looking so hokey and so campy.
Yeah, and that's...
And I would hate that for this series.
Oh, yeah, something like that would just destroy it, and you'd be like, nope. Yeah. But yeah, if somebody wanted to do a cartoon, I would be there.
Oh, yeah. Tuning in every week.
Oh, man. You know what?
So somebody with a huge budget, please, please, please pick up Throne of Glass and do it justice. From all of us.
Yeah, definitely. I am glad that I picked this up. You know, I started reading this more as just kind of a curiosity. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, half and half. You know, I grew up on Dragonlance and, you know, similar fantasy
sort type. Sword of Stone.
Yeah. But nowadays, I'm very much into reading things like about vampires and thrillers and cosmic horror. And so this is very much not usually in my wheelhouse. But when I started reading it, and I was really enjoying it. And so I thought, you know, oh, this is good. I'm glad I picked it up. And of course, now I'm 3/4 of the way through the series. And I'm, you know, I'm like, oh, man. It's a good series to pick up. I've been really enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you devoured Queen of Shadows in like 2 or 3 days. And I have not seen you devour a book that fast in so long.
I mean, the current one I'm reading is going pretty quick.
Yes, but I like even your cosmic horror books or anything, I have not seen you like devour something that fast. And I mean, so, okay, how do I phrase this? Throne of Glass is kind of considered like in the romantasy category. And when you say romantasy, you picture a bunch of women, right? Because romantasy or romance with a little bit of fantasy. This one is a bit more fantasy with a little bit of romance. Mm. Did that turn you off to reading it at first, like when I first started reading it? Did you kind of have that like in the back of your mind when you first picked up Throne of Glass and you were like, or are you like, this genre is okay? Like, I'm actually kind of enjoying this romantasy genre and more men should pick this up or be open to it.
That, for this particular story, it's fine. But I will say that I don't think that that's a blanket statement for all of what you would classify in the romantasy category. Mm-hmm. Because I still think there are a number of things that you enjoy and you read that I will not read because they're not up my alley at
Fair.
All. And I did feel that way about this one at first. I was like, I don't want to read about, like, I like fantasy and I like, you know, all the things that encapsulate that. But I am not a huge romance, book romance fan.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, I don't know, maybe you even told me that it was more like 80% fantasy and 20% romance. And even as far as I am in the story, the romance has actually been very, very, like,
minimal.
Yeah. There's actually just enough that it's like, okay, that's realistic. Like,
yeah,
you know, and all of it has actually been done,
behind the scenes
really
or
well,
behind closed doors.
Well, yeah, but just the relationship building has been done really well. Mm-hmm. You know, the characters, they get to know each other and they have their struggles and their, you know, the regular things that regular people go through.
Yeah.
And so that's been nice. And so I have been enjoying the fact that it is much more of the fantasy. I mean, even Dragonlance had romance in it, you know, and, you know.
They had romance. They didn't have what we would call smut or spicy scenes.
No, but, you know, fantasy, anything really, fantasy or thrillers or, I mean, I've got some more of the, you know, graphic smut stuff in my vampire books than are in Throne of Glass, honestly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not complaining about it. It's just not always in my wheelhouse for that kind of particular style of book. But I think that if you are a person who likes fantasy, you will enjoy these books. Man or woman, or, you know, anybody who's in between.
Anybody that enjoys fantasy.
Yeah. It's not just for men or women. It's for everybody. Anybody who wants to enjoy this, no matter, you know, what side of the fence you're on.
So would you recommend this book, this series so far?
All of them that I've read up to so far, yeah, I'd recommend these to anybody who wants to get started on the Throne of Glass.
Nice.
Because I'm really enjoying them. And once I finish the book I'm reading right now.
Which is,
I don't know. Maybe I should say that for later.
Oh.
No, we'll get into it. I took a break from Throne of Glass and I'm reading Fourth Wing, which is very different than Throne of Glass. But I am also very much enjoying that as well.
And you didn't think you would.
That one, I really didn't think I would, but that one I am actually enjoying quite a bit too.
You are devouring this book as well.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about that one soon too. Because I think you're fairly excited to have somebody to talk to about it now, so.
I am obsessed with the Fourth Wing, the Empyrean series, especially because Onyx Storm just came out and, whew, baby. But yes, I am very happy that you picked up Fourth Wing. I didn't think you ever would. I was hoping you would, but I wasn't going to shove it in your face because, I mean, you picked up Throne of Glass and it's an 8-book series, so I wasn't going to be like...
Yeah.
But you did, and you are devouring this book as well, so that makes me excited.
So once I finish with Fourth Wing, I will be moving back over to do the tandem read with Empire Storms and Tower of Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that will take me a little bit. But if, you know, if it continues and it's anything like Queen of Shadows, then I know that I'm going to be in for a good time and it's going to be hard to put that down. So.
Oh, yeah.
It is. It's good. I'm enjoying, you know, I'm enjoying these books quite a bit.
That's what we like to hear. I'm glad you are.
So, yeah. And yeah, so. That wraps up our Throne of Glass journey, book one. Done.
We got through it.
So if you guys haven't read the book by this point and you've listened to any of our podcasts, definitely get into the books because there is so much actually in there that we haven't even really had a chance to talk about because there's so much to talk about. Even with some of our podcasts that have gone nearly 3 hours, there's still things that we had to skip over because just so much can be talked about with the nuances and the relationships and the, you know, who did this and why'd they do it and who got screwed by that. And like, yes. There's just a lot. So if you've enjoyed any of this, go read them. You'll love them.
Like, and then come DM us. Let's chat about it.
Yeah, they're good books. And so on the next podcast, we will be starting Crown of Midnight. So if you're following along, make sure that you've read The first couple chapters. I don't know if we have it set yet, but it'll probably be like 1 through 7 or 1 through 8 or somewhere around there. So, get yourself caught up, so that there aren't any spoilers. And other than that, we just want to say thanks for joining us on this episode this week. We hope that we were able to give you guys some entertainment. We hope you maybe got a little push to want to get involved in reading some of this stuff. And if you have any, thoughts, theories, things you think we missed or whatever, give us a shout. Let us know.
And please remember to like, subscribe, and comment. Your ratings and likes really do mean a lot to us. And if you like what you hear so far, please share with your friends and family. You can also check us out on Instagram and TikTok and Threads. And as we head out, please don't forget to give some love to our friends over at K911 Rescue. That's K911 RESQ. They're all over social media. They have been working around the clock to post and share and help out as much as they can about the animals rescued from the recent LA fires. Please also visit Pasadena Humane Society. They have been working around the clock rescuing, treating, and trying to reunite animals with their owners from the LA fires. And we will drop both of their links in our show notes below. So please give them some love. All right.
Sounds good. And on that note, we
Happy reading.
will see you guys next time.